Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome everybody to another games dev developer interview with myself and Stubbs. Today we have the fantastic Zemi Burrows, who has created a brand new game called Back to School. Welcome, Zemi, and thank you for obviously letting us interview you.
Well, thank you so much for the invite.
Yeah, no, it is appreciated. Really, we like to do these little interviews, also not only to kind of promote your game, but also find out how intriguing the development is. And as I kind of guess, every developer is a little bit different, so it's always good to get a different perspective. Speaking of perspective, we'd like to find out a bit about yourself and how you got into the development game. Would you be out for having a chat about that? I think we've lost him.
Okay, no.
Potentially.
Let me tell you.
Sorry.
Right now, I am using. Well, I was using the Xbox wireless headset.
All right.
I have it connected to my Xbox and to my PC, and just every now and then, it just randomly disconnects from my PC, and that's exactly what happened. So it would have been comical for everyone. I'm happy I didn't have my camera on because there was fear on my face, and I was just scrambling to plug in this new headset before
Don't worry, trust me. I've got Stubbs with us. Trust me, he disappears from the entire conversation. So you having a
Yes.
microphone issue is not a problem. It's part and parcel of the development interview. Honestly, we would appreciate it. But yes, would you like to have a little bit of a background history of yourself and also how you got into the development game?
For anyone that doesn't No, I mean my online, I guess, persona and gamer tag for Xbox and pretty much PlayStation, Steam, everywhere is Zimmy Games. My real name is Trevor Burrows, and I started in content creation a long, long, long time ago, like 2016, 2017, and I've been doing that for a very long time, creating YouTube videos on the Constant Gamer YouTube channel. And a few years ago, I decided that I wanted to make a game. And it was a very, very long process of figuring out, everything, getting the funding together, coming up with a game idea, and then, of course, creating the game. And here, just recently on March 10th, or my studio, Goldenrod Games, there's more than one of me. There's actually two people that currently have been working on the game Back to School, which released on March 10th. I mean,
So
that's
who's
a
that second guy, if I may ask?
His name's Kyle Partlow. He is the lead programmer for Back to School, and he's actually also a recent graduate of Chico State University. He got a bachelor's degree in game design and programming.
Oh, fantastic. And this was just
Nice.
a kind of coincidence you two met, or have you known each other for quite a bit, sort of thing?
Yeah, no, so I actually put a job posting online because I was searching for a programmer. Whenever I first started making a game, I bought a ton of different tutorials and workshops and stuff like that for the Unity engine, and I learned quite a bit of programming. But I learned really, really quickly that my level of knowledge for C sharp, which is the programming language used to make most games, at least on console and PC, and major PC game releases, was just not on par, and that was one of the biggest weaknesses that I had. So I really needed a programmer, and so I went ahead, made a job posting, and Kyle, he found it, he submitted in his resume, and I hired him.
Fantastic. So again, you're kind of management as well as development, or is it more of an equal footing sort of thing?
Kyle mostly just kind of, he's very, very heavy into the programming. He does a good amount of like the actual game design of like putting the different components in the game where they need to go, setting up all the buttons to do the correct things. But you know, I'm also in the Unity engine right there with him, throwing in assets such as, you know, music and the text files, and you know, hooking up some of the, you know, different components inside of Unity. But as far as like the actual marketing of the game goes, and I guess, you know, the management and so on and so forth. Yeah. A lot of that, falls on me for sure, which is something that you will hear extremely, extremely often. If you look at like small indie, developers, is, this is a repeated thing, but, it really, anyone that's working on an indie project needs to know how to wear multiple hats, because it's just the way it is.
Yeah, I think that. Yeah.
I've heard many interviews with Joe from Song of Iron, and he wears many hats as well. Mm-hmm. He spoke heavily on that. He has.
Before. Yeah, which is actually kind of really interesting, because it's really, I guess I'm in some ways fortunate in the sense that, I, you know, my previous line of work that I've, you know, dedicated, probably going on 5 years of my life now too, which is content creation, is very, very similar in the same approach that whenever you're a content creator creating YouTube videos, you know, you wear multiple hats, right? You're your marketing guy, you're your camera guy. You write the scripts, you create the graphics, right? You're also the actor on camera performing, you know, during your YouTube video or whatever, which you know, translates over to you know, game design, actually, you know, somewhat pretty well, in the sense that you have a lot of responsibilities, not a whole lot of time, and you know, you're going to wear a lot of hats, right?
Yeah.
So you know, the time management skill set that I gained doing content creation definitely probably assisted me a lot.
It's enforced. It's ingrained into you now, isn't it? That's the thing. Whether you like it or not, it's been pushed in, and it's going to stick there. So actually, that's kind of led us into a nice little subject, is that, as you said, you were a content creator before, and you did some, as you said, you did some reviews and you did some guides. How has, now that you are a developer, have you kind of retrospectively looked back upon yourself and gone, either, wow, I really didn't appreciate certain things, or wow, I was on point? Or has it kind of, how has that impact your thinking process, sort of, now that you are, as you said, kind of knee deep into the development situation?
Yeah. Well, I can definitely say that I have definitely an increased appreciation for the games that we get to play, right? You know, even ones that are, you know, not as polished as what they need to be, or so on and so forth. You know, I will say that, you know, all of the reviews I've ever done, or all of the criticisms that I've ever, you know, pushed out to another developer, I probably wouldn't go back and change those. You know what I mean? Like, if I gave a game a 7 out of 10 in like a previous review of mine, I probably wouldn't go back and change it, you know, having the information I know now, because at the end of the day, you know, those reviews are,
you was honest as at that time with the information that you was given.
And the way I would make, the way I always made my reviews were from the point of view, if there was a 13-year-old kid that maybe only gets 2 games a year, is this one of the games that he might want, right?
Yeah.
And so a review, I always kind of laid very, very strongly on the consumer's perspective, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, going at a review from a game developer's perspective, I don't think would nearly be as valuable to consumers, quite frankly. So I probably wouldn't change my reviews, but I definitely look at, you know, game creation and actual games a lot differently.
Favorably.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think now that, and actually that's is a kind of a good little aspect to it, is that, do you think now then that, because you've had that knowledge, do you think in general reviewers and maybe game journalists, do you think a little bit of experience in the games would not be as a requirement, but would be helpful? And just give them a little bit more of an insight when they come to reviewing games, or do you think it's actually, no, you can kind of bypass it to some degree?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think for actual like mainstream professional game journalists, they kind of already have a really strong foothold into what it's like making a game, because, you know, a lot of game journalists that have been, you know, in the field for years now, like, chances are they've probably went to game studios before, they've watched and saw, you know, the actual process of building a game, and so they kind of already have that knowledge. But as far as, you know, smaller creators or smaller journalists, I think really doing a deep dive into the industry and figuring out how everything kind of works is, of course, going to be, you know, extremely beneficial to that journalist and to the types of content that they produce. And then, of course, you know, with that, it's going to be then beneficial to the viewers or to the, you know, people that are consuming the content.
A more informed reviewer will always, you know, provide a better content, I'd like to say. But sometimes they can also make you a little biased, which I think every reviewer sometimes falls into, regardless of how hard they do. We are always a little bit of a bias to maybe certain genres or certain types of game, which kind of speakingly leads me into, we haven't really spoken about the game you've created. No. Now, we know it's Back to School. So could you give us a little bit more information about the actual game itself?
Yeah. So Back to School is a educational quiz game where the player has to answer challenging primary school questions to see if they are smart enough, and with the goal of passing elementary school. And so whenever the player starts the game, they are in first grade. They have four quizzes to do. They have English, math, science, and social studies. Once the player completes all of those quizzes and receives a passing grade, they are then able to progress to the second grade. And the game kind of continues itself with completing quizzes until they get to the fifth grade. After that, they then pass elementary school. They get a final report card, and they can, of course, go back and redo all of the question or all of the quizzes to try to, you know, get it even to try to get an even higher grade if they would like. And then, of course, as the player progresses through Back to School from the first grade to the fifth grade, the questions continually get more difficult as you raise and upgrade.
So it's a very unique game, and I can tell it's a very educational game. What was the kind of illuminating light that kind of got you into this particular genre of games? Because it is a unique genre. There is, I would say, some of the education games I've seen, at least on the UK side, for those who are listening, they were horrendous. To mildly put it, they were very horrendous. Is it very similar to something back in the US where what's out there is just not good enough? So you kind of thought, you went, oh, okay, this is the inspiration. Or was it something a little bit different that kind of got you into this particular genre?
Yeah, I mean, I've always liked the educational genre, right? Like, I mean, there's a lot of genres in games though that are extremely underutilized and in some ways even forgotten, right? You know, most people, whenever they think of gaming, they don't think of playing an educational game, at least most people.
No, not at all. Exactly. Yeah.
You know, people with younger children that are really, really focused in on what they allow their children to play, you know, of course, they're probably going to be more knowledgeable about the educational genre. But whenever creating a game, and I definitely, you know, worked with a couple of different ideas before, you know, finally setting on Back to School. But one thing that really, really kind of was an inspiration of like actually just wanting to start up Goldenrod Games is to create games that are, you know, that are a part of like underutilized genres, or finding underutilized genres and trying to find a new way to make them new again, right? And so, like I said before, I've always been a fan of educational games. I, you know, I a lot of the times, like if I'm in an Xbox Live party or on the phone with a friend or something like that, you know, it is very, very frequent that I will start asking questions and want people to start asking me questions, like trivia questions or whatever it may be. It's just always something I've had a lot of fun with. And the more challenging the question, the better. And so ultimately, like that's definitely a big contributor is just my personal tastes. I really like educational, you know, games or, you know, gamifying education. And I thought that it would be really, really interesting to do that in, you know, in an actual game that's going to, you know, be published on Xbox and on Steam and hopefully maybe eventually on other platforms as well. Be published.
I mean, the fact that this game is on both platforms is exceptionally well done, and it is very good. Now, obviously, Back to School would hint that you're kind of the clientele that you're trying to aim for is maybe for the probably the older generation, just to see challenge themselves a little bit. But by the sounds of it, though, it could also be used for the younger generation who maybe are. Going, I wouldn't say through the school system, or maybe are going through the school system, which might give them a little bit of a helping hand, and also maybe parenting might give some parents a little bit of a helping hand, you know, with their children in terms of the actual education system.
Yeah, you know, well, first off, that's very astute of you to pick up on I guess the demographic that this game is targeting. I mean, so Back to School very much targets adults, right? Which that's, you know, one of the interesting challenges that I've felt while trying to market this game is to, you know, let people know that this game is actually for adults. Like it was 100% made in mind of an adult playing the game. Mm-hmm. And I think some of the most fun, you know, is whenever an adult actually sits down and plays it. However, you know, the game is also, you know, I guess multifunctional in the sense that children could, of course, play this game as, you know, an actual, you know, educational resource, right? Something that can help them learn. But a lot of the questions in this game are very, very challenging. They are elementary school questions. Or, you know, primary school, I guess, depending on where you're located. But they're extremely challenging. And so to have a lot of kids probably under the age of, I would say, 13 playing this game, you know, I'm not saying that they wouldn't enjoy it. Actually, on the contrary, I've heard many parents tweet at me and send me messages saying that their young children absolutely enjoy the game. But I definitely made the game in you know, in mind for adults, right? And to me, I think that that's probably the most fun playing it because you definitely have those comical moments where it's like, you know, that these are really, really, you know, elementary questions and that you should know the answer. And maybe you were taught this a long time ago, but for some reason you just don't know the answer. And I think some of the most fun can actually come from whenever adults actually play this game. And with that being said, you know, it can definitely help adults learn as well, you know, or maybe the word should be relearn. It's definitely a very multifunctional game in the sense of, you know, who is really being targeted with this game and who can play the game.
Yeah, and I think one of the things is that obviously if your child sees you playing it, that obviously is going to help them as well, saying it's like, well, oh, he's enjoying this educational aspect. You know, maybe it'll help, you know, it'll help them as well, saying if they see daddy learning, maybe, you know, it'll be like, oh, okay, it's fun. It's not as boring as it sounds. again, I think now the questions are, and I understand this is this is very much leaned towards the US education system. And I'm assuming this is, again, because A, you're in the US. So it's a much easier aspect to try and basically get these questions for the demographic that you're in. But was that still challenging for you? you know, going through trying to find particular questions? Or was it as simple as like trying to find a grade book and copy them and trying to implement them straight into the game? Or was it something along the lines you went, actually, no, I'm going to, you know, go through kind of the research I'm trying to, I suppose, is the question I'm kind of asking for.
Yeah, so it was challenging because, I mean, of course, you know, it's not challenging sitting down writing elementary school questions. That by itself isn't necessarily challenging. But what is actually more challenging than that is finding those elementary school questions that most people have been taught here in America, but probably don't remember. Like finding those really, really good questions. Yep. You know what I mean? That's really the challenging part of it. And so a lot of time definitely went into, you know, writing those questions. And of course, for each question, you know, we really, really, really don't want to get the wrong, like the question wrong, because, that would not look very good for a developer that's trying to make an educational game. So we also research, you know, each question, a ridiculous amount of time to hopefully make sure that that none of the questions are incorrect or wrong or so on and so forth. And then you also touched on the idea that like, this game is based off of the American education system, which is 100% true. I'm an American. Kyle, the other half of Goldenrod Games, he's an American as well. And, you know, we are a very, very small studio making a game with not a giant budget. And so, you know, as it stands right now, the game is only in English, and the game also has a heavy focus on the American education system. And a big reason for that is localization, right? And a lot of the times whenever we think of localization, the first thing that comes to mind is translating the game story and like the settings and so on and so forth. But one really big challenge we faced while making Back to School was that localization means a lot more than just that for Back to School, because, you know, the education system in each country is very, very different. You know, what the types of subjects that you learn in England, for instance, are going to be different, you know, than the subjects and the topics that are being taught in Japan. And the same is, you know, true for Italy and Mexico, for instance, right? So for us to add, you know, for us to localize this game the way that we would want to, we would have to redo all of the questions, do a ton of research, and then of course also translate the game as well. And so with our studio being as small as it is, that's just not really currently a possibility, but it's definitely something that we're looking in the future to maybe possibly being able to do if, you know, we sell enough copies and are, you know, funded well enough. But with that being said, though, you know, the game definitely becomes a little bit more challenging for people that live outside of the United States. and there are some questions that that are very focused on the American measurement system of like inches and miles, but not too many of them. And I would say overall, probably about half of the questions in the game are, well, probably half the questions in social studies is based off of America, and then the other half is probably more like world kind of history that it just generally speaking almost everyone's kind of taught. So you know, if someone does live in a foreign country, I wouldn't say to write off Back to School completely, because there's still plenty of subjects, plenty of questions that anyone, you know, regardless of where they're living at, could answer. And You know, we've had, you know, so far two streamers have agreed to play Back to School. One lived in Ireland, and he originally actually immigrated to Ireland, I believe, from Poland. So his first language wasn't even English. Yeah. But he sat down and he played the game, and he had a lot of fun. And then we had another streamer who lives in Australia play, and he played it for 4 hours straight, and got an A plus final grade. So he 100%ed the game.
Wow, that is good. Yeah. As I said, for me, actually, it's not. I wouldn't say it's a hindrance. I would say actually, it's actually more intriguing for those who don't live in the US because. There's a lot of, obviously, being from the outside, at least in the UK, we are intrigued and interested about the education system of the US. So if anything, it's going to be probably good for the nosy types like myself, you know, and Stubbs, who will be like, oh, okay, what you know, what topics are you being taught in the US sort mm-hmm. of thing? Did you go when actually choosing these questions itself, was it some things that you were like, did it appreciate the education system more, or was it something like, wow, we are, you know?
There's some interesting ones in there. I like to interject.
Yeah, cool.
There's one, like, I don't know how it was worded. Zemi may remember this one. And if Cerebral Paul was listening now, he probably would laugh at this one. Mm-hmm. And it's in relation to pineapple on a pizza.
Mm-hmm.
is it something like, is it good or is it should be something like
yeah.
that?
Well,
and then you put, is it a fact or is it an opinion?
Yeah. Yeah.
But a lot of people, that would have caught them out, because if they would have thought, yeah, a fact, then it's really an opinion. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That
I mean,
would have got a lot of people. That would have.
not meaning to insult anyone here, but I think, you know, if you spend enough time on social media and just out in the general public for long enough, you realize that. There are some things that are taught in elementary school that even still today, some people have issues with, like what is a fact versus what is an opinion.
And, yeah.
And that's something that is taught in elementary yeah. school. And I just thought, how fun would it be to put is pineapple, you know, pineapple delicious on a pizza, fact or opinion, and have the people, I guess, learn what a fact and an opinion, is. So yeah, there's definitely some really fun, creative questions that at least make me laugh, right? So yeah.
No, that's good. That's the kind of the questions is this is not really as I, you know, it was jokingly alluding to, is just a copy of a textbook straight into mm-hmm. into a game.
Yeah, no.
Not that those types of things do exist. Trust me, they do exist. And I think that's what I think we've often been, at least being old enough, the educational games I ever have been, it was literally a translation of a textbook. Just popped into a game mm-hmm. Where very much yours is a very much a different aspect and a different way of doing things. But in learning and in doing that, do you think that you've, again, it's one of those things, do you think you've have a big appreciation now of what was either missing, lacking, or what the US has accomplished in the education system?
Yeah. So, you know, I think that the education system, obviously, you know, and I can only really speak from America's point of view. I think it's I think that it's great, but it's not good enough. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Overall. And let me also lead in saying that I am not an educator whatsoever. I am not a teacher. That's not me. I am a avid fan of video games who became a content creator who then decided to make an educational video game. Mm-hmm. So let me just lead off with saying that. But I think, of course, like there's definitely some issues with the American education system. With that being said, when I, you know, was, you know, doing my schooling, I, you know, for the most part, really enjoyed my time at school. I really enjoyed learning the different subjects. And, you know, I definitely remember having a lot of really cool, unique assignments, right? However, with that being said, I also remember there not being a lot of enjoyable assignments as well. You know, it's kind of just a give and take. But, you know, I definitely think that, you know, a lot of the times whenever someone hears the word education, a lot of times they just like automatically turn off their ears. Like they're
it's
like
a flinching mechanism.
I don't want to hear this, right? Like, okay, yep. Next. You know what I mean? But I think that education can be fun, right? And I think it can be a fun, I think it can mm-hmm. be a fun experience for adults. And I think it can be a fun experience for teens and young children as well. And some of the best ways to learn is by gamification, right? Gamifying.
Yes.
And we do this in normal day-to-day life, you know what I mean? But, you know, using gamification to make boring, dull, you know, uninteresting tasks more interesting, yep. I think is a great way to hopefully get more people interested in education and in learning, right?
Yes, and I think this is one of the things that, and again, I'll just go back a little bit itself. Trust me, the UK education system isn't great either. well, I think regardless of where you are in the education system, I think we can always do better. But that's the evolution of the education system, regardless of which country you're in. But as I said, one of these things of gamification of education, it's not really, I suppose it's kind of still seen as almost like a taboo thing mm-hmm. because you don't, it's like, oh, we can't make it too fun. Well, it's like, why? That's probably the best way of educating someone. You know, mm-hmm. How many times have you played a game? One of the games I'm playing recently in terms is actually pagan lore. And it's like, oh, this existed, but I never knew it existed. And it's a very intriguing and interesting aspect, which I probably wouldn't have known about unless I played that game. So it is a very good education tool. And I am surprised that it isn't often used more. And I kind of, as I suppose the question I'm asking is, do you have any kind of, what's your thoughts on this? Is it a particular reason for it not to be gamified more often? Or do you think it's just like too much effort, or is it kind of still seen as like a taboo thing where it's like you can't put gaming and education together?
You know, I think that, you know, there's some studios that create some phenomenal games that are in a lot of ways, you know, can be educational in the sense that there are certain things that the player will learn that are accurate that they previously didn't know and they only found by playing, you know, that video game, right? I think a great example of that would maybe be Assassin's Creed. Right now, of course, mm-hmm.
yeah,
they take a lot of liberties with history.
Yes.
But you know, especially in like the older Assassin's Creed games, you could kind of go and read the different biographies from like the different historical figures. And for the most part, a lot of that type of stuff was accurate, right? And,
yes.
You know, I think that, you know, whenever games do it like that, it's, you know, it's great and it's used to great effect, right? However, you know, a lot of games, they don't come out and explicitly market themselves as an educational product, right? Which is what Back to School and what I've, you know, done with Back to School.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, in some ways, this is kind of a test. You know, if it works, great. If people really, really like it. And if, you know, enough people buy it to where, you know, we can continue to make games like this, then fantastic, right? But I think at the end of the day, the consumer is gonna speak the loudest on what they like and what they don't mm-hmm. like. And, you know, only time's going to tell as far as that one's concerned with Back to School.
Yeah, no, I mean, I guess one of these things, is you quite rightly said, is the historical aspects are quite often used as a, you know, it's a almost like a here's something for you to look at or read besides playing the game, where you very much put it forefront of the game. Mm-hmm. And I was just, it's one of those things is I don't often see this, how do I put it in a polite way? I don't often see a very good version of this, if that makes yeah. sense. So it was intriguing to see this come through. And I said, especially to see it come through on Steam and Xbox. Mm-hmm. it is going to be a, I think it's going to be a very good and beneficial thing. Now, I know Stubbs has played this game, and not only did he play it himself, he even basically, did you bribe your partner to play this game, was intrigued by this?
She was actually interested in interviewing the developer tomorrow. Do you want to have a go at this game? It's an educational game, and she was more than willing to play it, and she got more into it than I did. She thought it was quite good. I mean, just for people that don't know, this game is £4, I think 19 pence on the UK store on Xbox, and it's, I believe, on the American
six
store,
or seven four, dollars.
$4.99. Am I right, Zemi? $4.99.
You are. Yep. It is $4.99. Yeah.
Pretty much. In my opinion, it's a very good value money. It's not. You're not asking the earth for someone to try it. It's quite a cheap game for what it is. We tried it, and obviously, when I first started playing it, because firstly, this game made me feel like I was absolutely stupid. It did, but I'm not used to doing it. I don't want to do my son's homework. Well, my wife does my son's homework, because in my opinion, the education system in the UK, for young kids at primary school, the work they get given now compared to what I got given is much harder than it used to be. It is. A lot of stuff, or it's just I'm stupid now, either way. But it's a fun game. We managed to get an average grade of C over the whole game. But obviously, if it was me, probably would have failed, to be honest. You know, due to my wife. But it was some fun questions in there. But one thing I would add, though, I wanted to know if you had a reason for this. Do you know when you finished, say you finished, say, social studies, and now I'm thinking, is this because at a school they wouldn't give you the correct answers? But it doesn't give you it doesn't say, obviously it tells you what you've got wrong.
Yeah.
But it doesn't tell you what the answer was to that correct answer. Is that because at school they wouldn't do that? Is that why? Yes.
Yeah. So I maybe I missed out on a genre whenever I was talking about the game earlier. This game also has some elements of a simulation in it, right? It's also kind of a school simulation game as well, and so that can be seen in a couple of different ways. One way being that they wouldn't give you the correct answer in real school, and we're not going to do it for you either. We will let you know if you got the answer correct or incorrect, however. But my mindset with that is one of the best ways that I use to learn anything is just by trial and error, right? That's always kind of worked for me. And of course, there's multiple different ways that people learn and so on and so forth. But I definitely wanted to allow players, if they didn't know an answer, to keep going in, keep guessing, you know, making those educational guesses until they finally get that answer right. You know what I mean? And, you know, through trial and error, you know, hopefully, you know, they actually learn, you know, that concept that was, you know, in front of them, whether it be, how to solve like a certain equation in math or, an idea of like planetary, you know, science, you know what I mean? Hopefully they actually learn and take in that knowledge and hopefully keep it for a while. So that's definitely a very strong idea is, you know, trial and error learning. But then also the game is a simulation. And one really cool feature about Back to School I get so giddy whenever I talk about, like I really do.
It's good.
And it's really not like a lot of people, like after I say it, they're gonna be like, hold up, Trevor. Like you're getting a little bit too excited over in-game timer, but this in-game timer I think is flipping cool.
Oh yes, I forgot to mention that timer. You've got to, like, you can't just, because it keeps you going. You know where I'd grab
keeps the you on phone your toes
and cheat, but you don't. You think, oh, these timers keep going, so just gotta keep cracking on.
You know what I mean?
It keeps you going. It literally does. Because if you didn't have a timer there and you wanted to cheat per se, you could just Google everything. You're all right. You could do that.
Yeah,
but it defeats the point of the game, really, if you do that. It does.
Yeah. Now I will say one really cool thing about this timer as well, though, is the timer isn't per question. So the way that the timer works is there is an option for no timer, and we put that in there because of accessibility. You know, there are a lot of people in the world that have the challenge of trying to learn with a learning disability, and we wanted to make sure that the game is accessible, and regardless of, you know, what learning disability you have, our ultimate goal is to allow all players to, you know, be able to play back to school if they want to. We do have an option to remove the timer completely, right? There's also an easy timer, which is set to 10 minutes, a medium timer, which is 5 minutes, and then a hard timer, which is set for 2 minutes, which is really, really difficult, really, really hard.
Mine's set to 10.
Yours is set to 10?
My anxiety. Oh, I know, I have said this before. It's like, if you set me out of questions and I can slowly progress through it, I'm fine. You put a time up me, my brain just frazzles.
Yeah. No, it does. I mean, there's a lot of people that have real anxiety with tests and not having enough time to complete and so on and so forth. And
yeah,
and so that's completely up to the player on how much time they want to give themselves. But the player that definitely is wanting to have a more challenging experience, I recommend going to the 2 minute timer first and then maybe just slowly dropping it as you need it. And then, of course, for players that don't want any challenge or want a very minimal amount of challenge, they can go with the easy timer. But the timer is set for the entire quiz, right? So it's not that you have 2 minutes or 10 minutes per question, it's 2 minutes or 10 minutes per the entire quiz. Now, in back to school, if the timer runs out, a bell sounds, like a school bell rings, and it indicates to the player, hey, you ran out of time. But if you've gotten enough questions correct, then you will still pass the test, which is different from a lot of games where if the timer runs out, you automatically fail that mission, not in back to school. The game will actually grade the quiz that you were working on, and if you got enough questions correct, you still pass the test, you still move on to the next subject, to the next grade, which is true in real life. If you're taking a test and let's say that you have enough questions correct that you're going to get a D, you know, the teacher isn't going to just automatically fail you for, you know, not being able to answer the other questions. They're going to grade what's done and give you the appropriate grade, which also kind of falls into the whole idea of simulation.
No, that's I read that after, because obviously I read the description after, because I was looking at the replayability, because I thought it's going to come up with the same question. So we thought we'll have a go again.
Mm-hmm.
And the questions that you obviously we got wrong were there, but the questions we got correct had changed to different questions, which was nice, because there's over 500 questions available. There is, which is quite good.
Yeah. I mean, and there's not an unlimited amount of replayability. You know, it's just not in the game. The way that we have it set up is for questions to be randomly taken out of lists for each subject within each grade. And there's around 25 to 50 questions per list, which definitely does not offer unlimited amounts of replayability. It just doesn't. However, on the 25th of March, so here in 6 days, my math is good.
Yep.
Thank God my math. We will be releasing an additional 500 questions to the game in an update for free, right?
Oh, so wow.
So we are going to be doubling the amount of questions and back to school for free to add in some extra replayability. And then in addition to that, we're also going to be, pushing up some fixes for some just minor bugs that we've found and some players have found while playing the game.
Speaking of the bugs, and in terms of also the accessibility, was this something that you went straight purposely into creating, or was it something that you kind of moved towards as your creation went through and you started developing it? as you testing yourself when actually this is a better, much more accessible way of dealing with it than say the original process?
Yeah. So this game is very text based. And so, you know, it involves a lot of reading. And so whenever I before I finally, finalized the game idea that I wanted to do, there was a couple of different ideas. And quite a few of them were text-based. I love text-based games and not enough people make them. And they're very rare to find on Xbox. Right?
Yes. Very rare.
I think that there are some amazing advantages that you can do with a text-based game that you just really can't do with third person action adventure game with graphics, and character animations and so on and so forth. So whenever I came into that idea, one thing that I wanted to do was I wanted to definitely add in accessibility, because there is a lot of people with learning disabilities, and a lot of those learning disabilities result in people not being able to read as well. Illiteracy, is very, very, I'm not going to say is extremely common, but, it is common enough to where I definitely wanted to have in accessibility features, for instance, giving the player as much time as they wanted. One thing that I really, really wanted to add into the game as well was voice acting, having a voice actor read off all of the questions, all of the answers, all of that different stuff. Unfortunately, it just wasn't in the budget. What we were able to do, though, very shortly after the release of the game, is we were able to add in a text-to-speech narrator that reads off all the questions and all the answers for any player
fantastic.
That's unable to read. Yeah. It's really kind of amazing how you start off with a very simple idea, and then it just keeps growing and growing and growing and growing and expanding and getting bigger. And, it just surprises me. But, upon looking in and researching, boring Trevor is about to happen, but 32 million adults, and these statistics are from the United States Department of Education and the National Institute of Literacy, but 32 million adults cannot read in the United States. That's roughly 14%.
Wow.
And what I believe that they're going on is what's called functionally illiterate, which means they have difficulties doing day-to-day tasks because of their inability to read. 21% of U.S. Adults read below a fifth grade level, and 19% of high school graduates can't read. Right?
Wow.
Those are some pretty shocking numbers. and once again, those statistics come from, I believe, 2021, and they were posted by the U.S. Department of Education and the National Institute of Literacy. So whenever I saw those, I was definitely really, really shocked, and so that made me want to add in accessibility features even more. But what it made me want to do even more than that was to also add in even more. And so what we're actually doing now with Back to School is 10% of all profits from the game are going to be donated to the National Center for Learning Disabilities, which is an organization that helps children, teens, and young adults who have a learning disability.
That is fantastic.
I'm extremely excited and super happy and proud to say that we're able to do that. So that's
that is a very good, very right. It's a fantastic, and hopefully we'll try and provide the link and drop it in for those listening or watching this at a later event, so you can also maybe help out a little bit in that regard. But that is fantastic. I mean, it just shows. Well, I always find it shows a level of commitment and a level of dedication, and also the ethos of the indie developer is so much more I'm going to be very careful my wording here. Honest, if that makes sense.
I would use a different word. I would say agile.
Yeah, I think an agile would be probably a better, actually, a pretty adjective. Yeah, probably agile. And do you think now that because you're in that game, have you kind of found yourself, has it opened your eyes up more than you appreciated? Besides, not just the only in terms of the game development, but actually the world that you inhabit.
I don't know if I fully understand your question.
So, for instance, now you know you're as you said, as you one of the things you said, the simple design has progressed, and it gets higher, it gets more complicated, more evolved as you have moved forward. Now that you're into this position where you're adding every little thing, adding aspects to this game, even just like an extra 500, 500 words. Yeah. Sorry, it's not 500 questions. That isn't a very easy task to accomplish, I'm assuming.
It sounds easier than what it actually ends up being, yeah.
Yeah. So with that knowledge now, is this something that you've kind of like, is like, wow, I really, I suppose what I'm looking at, it's like your general starting point to where you are now. Has you been like completely blown away with the education that you've learned from it?
Yeah. I mean, like overall, like the entire experience has definitely opened my eyes a lot. Of course, into the you know education system here in America and you know how much information people really truly retain. From their education, but then also you know what types of struggles people still have today. Like it definitely opened my eyes as far as that's concerned. But it also definitely gave me a very 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 strong appreciation of what game developers do on a day to day basis. because you know it's one thing being a gamer and thinking about it, you know, it's another thing being, you know, a content creator and, you know, creating topics about it. It's a completely different thing. Actually sitting down and making a game and, you know, not coming from a lot of like a large background in game development, right. You know, my skill set is very focused at marketing. Right. Mm-hmm. I've played a lot of games. Right.
Which is rare because not many indie devs have that skill set. So, you know, you've got something a lot of them don't have.
Yeah. 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 Which actually is really interesting in of itself as well. Yeah. But sitting down and making a game, I mean, there's a lot of discoveries that you make and not discoveries in the sense of no one's ever thought about this before, but just discoveries in the sense of I never thought about this before. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that I definitely kind of, you know, learned and you kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, your word for it was honesty. My word for it was agile, mm-hmm. Or agility. Maybe the way that I'm able to go in and have conversations with players is completely different than the way that, you know, a community manager would be able to go in and have a conversation with players, just how big studios are able to do it. Because, you know, we're working with a two-man team here and, you know, I'm the community manager and I'm also the owner of the studio. So if you want anything in the game, the best thing to do is just come and talk to me. And then, if it's feasible, then it can happen. Right. And so, you know, just the ability to, you know, talk to people, hear what their complaints might be, or hear the things that they really enjoy the game, or hear about a feature that they would like to see. Because, you know, for instance, you know, I was talking about the text-based or like the text-to-speech feature, mm-hmm. for instance, right? That was something I wanted to put in the game originally. I didn't necessarily want to put it in as like a text-to-speech. I wanted to put it in as like actually like narration, like someone
actually said voice work,
like voice acting work. It wasn't in the budget, but someone, I saw a reply, I'm assuming it was a he, they basically mentioned that they had dyslexia, but they wanted to play the game, right? And he, or they were asking if, you know, if there was any option of like hearing the questions and the answers. And of course, you know, the answer to that question at that time was no. That was until 2 days later, whenever we brought it out in an update. So, you know, that level of like agility of being able to see something and then like immediately start working towards it. I really, really appreciate from the indie side of things. Of course, you know, there's give and take and all of this, you know.
Yeah.
One of the takes of that is, you know, we don't have the funding, you know, that other studios have. So yeah.
Oh no, you've got a hell of a lot of much smaller budget and everything's a lot tighter. Yeah, I suppose, and that comment, I suppose I'm going to lead on to another question. For those who are potentially thinking about getting into game creation or game developing, what would your best advice be coming from that, now that you've done it yourself? And also in terms of best advice, I mean, just like, you know, potentially what to do, but also maybe things to avoid as well.
Yeah, so I mean, I you know, in all fairness, I literally just published my very first game, so I am not the best person to take advice off of this from. Let me just put out
but that, there surely must be some things that you've learned. Do you know what? Oops.
there's a few things. I would say if there's anyone that's listening that actually, you know, is interested in making a game, the first thing that I would say is to probably like audit your skill sets, right? Figure out what you're good at doing first and foremost, because that's going to have huge implications on the entire project, right? You know, basically audit, you know, your skills and your resources, right? How much money do you have? What are you able to do, right? For me, the way I was looking at it is I looked at the budget that I had. Don't want to tell anyone because it's quite embarrassing. And I looked at my skill sets. What's my skill set?
Yeah.
I'm pretty good at marketing, right? I know a little bit of C#, and I, you know how to use the Unity engine pretty decently, and I'm, I guess, decent writing, right? So the main thing I was missing was a programmer. So I went and got a programmer, right? So that's kind of what I was looking at from that point of view of, hey, you know, these are my skills. This is the resources that I have, and this is what I need, right? And then once I figured out what I needed, I went and I obtained it. The next thing I would say is, you know, once you have that figured out, start thinking about game ideas, right? You know, what type of game do you want to create? More importantly, what type of game can you create? And it's a balancing act, right? It's, you know, what I want to create versus what I can create. You know what I mean?
The limitations of oneself or one's budget in some cases.
Absolutely.
Are pretty eye-opening, I suppose, to the first-time developer.
And going just like a little deep into marketing, you know, also, you know, you have to look at the project, like the actual product that you're looking to create. How is it different from other products that are currently out on market right now? Right. Because, you know, you ideally want to make a game that's going to sell and that people are actually going to be interested in buying. I mean, that's kind of the end goal, right? Unless you want to have a really short history in game development, you know, people need to buy your product. But it also has to be something that you're really passionate and you enjoy, because if it's not, then you're going to give up, right? So basically, you know, once you find that idea, and it is really easy for me to say that you just have to do X, Y, and Z. It's a lot harder actually doing X, Y, and Z. Finding the actual idea for your game is incredibly difficult. Especially whenever you tie in all the different restraints and you know that you're going to face and so on and so forth. And after that, sit down and get ready for a lot of moments where you just want to quit.
Well, that's actually brought up to what question I was there. It's like every time I've interviewed a indie developer, they've said it is literally the amount of times they've said it is like I wanted to quit so many times. But I was too stubborn enough to move. I moved forward because I was stubborn enough. it sounds like, in a way, it's like, why would anyone want to get into it? But as you kind of allude to, passion is the key. Passion mm-hmm. for the development process, but also the game which you wish to try and make versus what you'd like to make. It sounds like you kind of do need a little bit of a stubborn streak to be the very best.
I mean, and fortunately for me, I'm by far the most stubborn person I know.
So regardless of what it is, like, I'm going to finish this. I don't care. I'm going to absolutely finish that.
If I want it bad enough, then I am, right? You know, I'm not saying that I've always went through with every single project that I've ever worked on. Like, there's been mm-hmm. plenty of things that I tried because I thought that I was interested in it and discovered rather quickly that I wasn't really interested in it. So I just kind of tossed it aside and moved on to the next thing. However, you know, I can at least say this. I'm really interested in content creation because I've been doing it for a very, you know, pretty long time. And I'm also really apparently interested in video game development because there was a lot of work that went into this as well. And there's a lot of times I wanted to just throw in the towel and just give up and say, forget this. Because the number of things that you encounter that should work, like, you just know it in your heart that they should just work, right? No, it doesn't. They don't work. Does game development go the way that you want it to go? It almost never does that.
It did sound like, and that's why I was surprised with the extra 500 questions update. I mean, in the very limited knowledge that I have of programming, it seems to me that every time you put something in, it breaks two other things. So I was like, oh god, you know, it's like, so for you to go ahead and do that, I was like, wow, either you really know, you've really got it ironed out, all ironed out.
Well,
you're really stubborn.
I'm really stubborn. Probably a mixture of the two. You know, adding in like the questions really isn't super, super difficult. You know, the way that we have the game programmed, it's not super, super difficult. A lot of it's just making sure that you have the formatting of each question mm-hmm. correct, because if you don't, then it can make the game do some wonky things. but really and truly, you know, the actual implementing new questions in the game isn't really super, super difficult. Really, the most time consuming part of adding in new questions is honestly just writing them, you know, and making sure that the question is engaging in, you know, to a certain extent, you know, at the correct difficulty level for, you know, the first grade or for the second grade, because the idea is, you know, whenever the player clicks on the first grade, we want it to truly be a first grade question. And the same with all the other grades, but we don't want it just to be a first grade question or a second grade question. We want it to be a challenging and engaging question mm-hmm. that makes the player think and hopefully makes the player, you know, just kind of laugh at themselves and they, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I have no idea what this answer is.
I think, to be honest with you, after hearing Stubbs, I think that I probably would be very much that be happening on every single question.
What somebody said, I can't remember who it was. I was on like another interview, I think on the Double Barrel Gaming channel, and somebody said, like, that was on the panel, made the relationship that this game is like the Dark Souls of education games. I think it's absolutely comical. I believe it if you turn on that 2-minute timer.
Yeah. Prepare to get frustrated instead of prepare to die. But I mean, in that sense as well, then there's that, clearly, as you said, you have the passion through this game mm-hmm. is, you can see it, you can hear it in your voice, absolutely, in terms of this. Where do you foresee, if, and I'm hoping obviously it will sell well, where do you foresee yourself progressing? Have you got in your back of your mind a goal you'd like to move forward? Is it to stick with the text-based games and education, or is it maybe to branch out into different elements that and bring the education aspect into different genres a little bit more heavily? Yeah, it is at the moment.
You know, one of like the core principles of Goldenrod Games, which is my studio's name, one of the core principles is to take underutilized genres or forgotten genres, and make something new out of them, or combine them, you know, and make something, you know, new, right? It's kind of, in some ways, it's taking old genres that, you know, people used to really enjoy, but most companies aren't using anymore. Mm-hmm. And just kind of reinvent the wheel and try to figure out how to make that game something that hopefully people want to buy again, right? Mm-hmm. So that doesn't just completely deadlock us to educational text trivia simulation games, right? You know, we do have some ideas of different things that we would like to do with Back to School. There's actually, both in the sense of potentially a sequel, but then also in the sense of just like add-ons and DLC, both paid.
Oh yeah, I mean, it allows you to try and open everything up, like back to university, back to, you know, preschool. You know, yeah. There is so much in it. You have, it's almost like a little mini series in itself, isn't it? You've created, or could create, I should say.
No, for sure. Now, you know, we haven't like officially like announced or confirmed that there's DLC coming to Back to School or anything like that, because a lot of that's just going to be based on just how successful the game is, right?
Yeah.
You know, if not a lot of people are interested in it, then it kind of makes just the more business sense. Then, you know, business Trevor has to come out and say, okay, there's really no reason why we should make DLC that, you know, almost no one's going to buy, right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
As far as like other games or other, you know, IP, it's something I think about very frequently, and it's something I would definitely like to jump into. Other text-based games I think would be fantastic. I also have some ideas of some bigger, like more AA, AAA-ish experiences that I think would be
interesting.
Really, really incredible to make.
But we won't ask you. We'll let you further, Trevor, tell us.
Yeah. Let future me hopefully tell you about this. A lot of it just relies on funding. You know, if we sell copies, then, you know, we have the money to then reinvest into other games, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of like really the ultimate goal and dream from, you know, from that point of view of where we want to take the studio and like some of the future, you know, things that we want to work on. Yeah.
I just to kind of tie that one up, if I may, with in terms of, because obviously this is now on Xbox and it is now on Steam. I'm assuming they were very different ways of actually getting these games onto those platforms. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming it wasn't as easy as it probably makes it sound. And I was just wondering if you could be able to, and I appreciate if you can't answer this question, if you'd be able to kind of discuss a little bit about either the positives or negatives of how you had to get your game onto those platforms.
Yeah, I mean, so of course, you know, with Steam, I signed a NDA, which is a non-disclosure agreement.
Yep.
And with Microsoft, even to publish through the Creators Program, I signed an NDA. So, you know, there's definitely certain things, you know, I can't talk about or wouldn't want to talk about or anything like that. What I can say is that, you know, yeah, the process of, you know, publishing on Steam versus mm-hmm. on Xbox, or really any other platform, is very, very different. You know, the user interface of the tools that you use to publish the game onto different platforms is vastly different. Some of them are more difficult than others. I'm not going to say which ones, you know, which, but, you know, just some platforms are just more difficult than other platforms. And, you know, Kyle, you know, who I mentioned before, the lead programmer, you know, he has, you know, he's worked on other games before, but he made the game. He didn't publish the game. Right. So he never really went through the process of actually, taking the game from the Unity engine or from any engine and then putting it on an actual platform, like, you know what I mean, like uploading the game.
It sounds like it was very eye-opening, even just the fact, as you said, and again, being naive, being just more of a gamer and being naive, just understanding that every platform has a different way of getting your game onto said platform.
Yeah,
that in itself is like, wow, that's another level of elements you have to take on board. So normally we hear in the gaming circle and the gaming thing is like, why is it on all platforms? That in itself is just one aspect of why certain things may not be easy to get a game onto all platforms.
Well, I mean, another thing though too is porting games, which is, you know, taking a game that, you know, was made on PC and putting it on Xbox and so on and so forth. You know, a lot of the times, like, we like to think it's easy. You know what I mean? We as gamers, like, we like to say, oh, well, all you got to do
that magic button. You press it and it does it for you, isn't it? That's the one I get game told of.
You just got to change the controls and do this, do that. You know, it's easy, right? You know, it's kind of like one of those, you know, it's kind of like, okay, like I'll put it like in kind of like in this perspective, like whenever you go to like the grocery store and you purchase, you know, product, you set it on the counter and the cashier rings it up, all that different stuff. And you pay the cashier, you move on. Right. A lot of people, a lot of the times, if they've never worked as a cashier, they look at that cashier and think to themselves, wow, that's a pretty easy job. Right.
Yeah, very much.
But all you got to do is just be a cashier for a day and you'll figure out really quickly that is not an easy job, right?
No, not at all.
There's a lot of things that can break and just not work, and it may work perfectly on PC, but just work vastly different on another platform. And yeah, I mean, and ideally, you need to test those things, right? You know, every time that you add anything or remove anything from the game, like ideally, you want to test it as much as possible to make sure that there's nothing critical, you know, that could possibly, you know, break the game, right? And, you know, and then
of course, cause
the consumer that spent money on your product to be quite upset with you, right? You know, so you know, porting isn't really always the easiest thing to do, you know, for a game. A long time ago, you know, whenever I was but solely a young gamer, or even, you know, just whenever I was a content creator, you know, I kind of always had it in my mind that, well, porting probably wouldn't take that long, but, you know, I got an appreciation for people that port games over, because it definitely is a very, very challenging thing. You know, and a lot of the challenges that we felt were only amplified because just not having years of experience, you know, in this industry, right? I mean,
yeah, certainly. Yeah.
Whenever I tell you that Goldenrod Games is an indie studio, we are an indie studio, like 110% indie.
He's waiting for Phil Spencer to give him that call, the acquisition. He's waiting for a big paycheck, multi-million-dollar deal.
Oh, goodness gracious, that's not going to happen. But, no, I mean, and so, like, you know, just, you know, with just the nature of this studio and you know, it's, you know, a lot of things that, you know, for bigger studios probably wouldn't be as challenging for us. A lot of the things, you know, we were just learning as we went, you know what I mean? Like, how do we how do we publish on Steam, for instance? I don't know, like, you know what I mean? And
I was gonna say, there's no like Wikipedia out there that tells you this, does it?
No, I mean,
is there?
Well, each platform has like different resources that they offer, you know, to help and so on and so forth. You know, sometimes those resources aren't as accurate or as up to date as you would like them to be. Not going to mention any platforms or anything like that. I'm just saying, you know, So and then at that point, then, you know, it's all about going to YouTube. And let me tell you, I used to say something. I don't say it anymore. I used to say, if you ever want to know how to do something, go to YouTube.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There's misinformation that is, on YouTube now.
That is completely wrong. Because
the downvotes is now has been removed, is now probably hindered a lot of game development.
Look, YouTube is a fantastic resource, and you will find a lot of answers on YouTube.
That's true.
But it's just undeniable that you're going to have a very, very extremely specific, very situational question of how do I do X, Y, and Z, and just, you know, no one's ever created a video on it. So, you know,
yeah, is a
great
that.
Which is a great time for you, once you find the answer, to create the video to hopefully make some money off of it through ad revenue on YouTube. But it doesn't really help you whenever you need the answer, right?
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Do you think you ever put Back to School on the PlayStation platform? Is that in your vision, or is it based off sales, etc., going forward?
The last thing I ever want to do is lied to anyone. I've tried to be 100% transparent, you know, while making this game and while marketing it as well.
Yeah.
I can't honestly give you an answer of it. You know, will we put it on PlayStation or Nintendo or any other devices? What I can say is that, you know, we are interested in doing it. A lot of it, once again, just kind of rides off of how well does the game perform on Steam and on Xbox, right?
That's true. Yeah, I understand that.
One thing that is kind of common knowledge, so, you know, I don't have any real problem of saying this, but as far as consoles go, Xbox is a lot easier to work with for publishing a game, right? They definitely have a lot less restrictions and so on and so forth. With that being said, you know, we might bounce back to, you know, one of the big things that people ask about Back to School, which is achievements. We might bounce back to that here in a few minutes, but overall, on the flip side, we've heard a lot of reports, you know, that PlayStation isn't really the easiest to kind of work with. From just researching it in depth, like, that's kind of something that I came to the consensus with as well. So because of that, you know, If we sold enough copies, if the game performed well enough, and if we had the funding to publish the game on PlayStation and on Nintendo, then we, of course, would do that. As it stands right now, that's just kind of a big question mark. We were also looking at getting this game published on Google and Apple, iOS. We were looking at a mobile port as well, but we weren't really happy with the way that the game was performing on those types of devices. So rather than pushing out a product that I didn't feel comfortable with selling, I, you know, went ahead and pulled that. We were planning to launch that on March 10th alongside the console and the PC version, the Xbox and the Steam version. But that did get pulled because I just wasn't happy with the way that currently looked or played. Something that we're still working on. That could maybe possibly come out, but it could also not come out. So, a lot of that just kind of depends on performance and if we can get it to work the way that we would be comfortable, to having players spend actual money to buy and play.
Yeah, I can understand that. And I'm assuming this is, it's just, as you said, as it's time to, mobile devices are again, another challenging aspect in just developing
film. I mean, that just kind of bounces back into the whole porting idea on a mobile device, your screen's just a lot smaller. There's also different aspect ratios, right? You know, for the most part, you know, if you're playing on Xbox or if you're playing on PC, you're probably going to be playing on a 16:9, you know, aspect ratio, screen, right? it's different on phone, and then also just the actual size is different on the phone. So then you're working with, okay, well, how do I make these text components look bigger and still kind of keep the aesthetic of the game the same? So there's a lot of challenges that we found when trying to port the game over to mobile devices. And, you know, we just weren't super, super happy with the performance. And like I said, you know, if I'm not happy with its performance, I'm not going to pass that on to gamers to, you know, spend actual money on to purchase, you know?
No, and it also, as you said, you want to keep your reputation for quality.
Mm-hmm.
At a consistent, you know, as a consistent level sort of thing. I would, Stubbs, is there something you, I think you just kind of flipped something. I was kind of dived in front of you, didn't I, for a second?
Did you? I can't remember what I was about to say.
In terms of, Stubbs, in terms of, you said you've played this game, and you played it all the way through, is that correct?
Yeah, I played it all the way through from first grade to fifth grade. Obviously, with a game like this, you have to keep, we played it once or twice, but obviously multiple times. It has actually got replayability, and then as I asked Zemi why there was no answers, he's obviously very well explained it very well.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I think value for money wise, it's in my opinion, it's a very good game, and anyone who's listening should go and check it out. It's only £4 in the UK. Most people could have a punt on that. Just give it a go. Yeah, it's a very cheap price. It is. So I'd recommend it. I would.
We'll put a link to the actual Microsoft store as well. I think we can probably link in Steam store for those as well.
It's in the, because Zemi provided the, obviously he provided with me a load of source material. The links to the games are actually in the description. So if you listen to this on YouTube and on Spotify or Apple, they will be hyperlinked in the description. You just click the link and it takes you directly to this relevant store page, i.e. Steam store page or Xbox store page. It will.
That's fantastic. Zemi, I was just going to, well, I don't want to take up too much of your time because you're probably eager to dive into not only tweaking your game again, but also trying to give yourself a bit of a break as well. But before we kind of shoot off, there's one of the things is, you've been working on this game for quite a while now, is that correct? It's been a couple of years. Is this in terms of the process that you've been dealing with this?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the time that this game was in active development was 6 months. But I've been planning and working towards getting this game made and developed and, you know, getting all the resources, getting all the ducks in line for probably about 1.5 years, 2 years. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. See, there you go. So if you are interested in development, again, please try and follow on Zemi on Twitter. I'm sure he will help you out. I've always found that indie developers do help each other out tremendously. They're very often, you know, they're pretty good people to try to have a chat with. Zemi, I'm assuming this is correct. I don't want to put words in your mouth in this regard. Have you spoken to any other developers in aspects in terms of the game, or very just basic, you know, in terms of like queries or questions? It just kind of been you and your colleague.
Yeah, no. You know, we didn't really reach out to a lot of indie developers while making this game. Not you know, for any particular reason. You know, a lot of the times we just didn't really need it, or we were kind of just being stubborn and we wanted to just, you know,
learn yourself. Yeah,
learn the set. Yeah. But I will say that, you know, I have spoken with a lot of different indie developers before and asked them, you know, questions about the whole process and so on and so forth. And, you know, they've always been extremely gracious and helpful and, you know, given me, you know, like an hour or two of their time, you know, to jump into like a call and even have like a chat sometimes. So, you know, I definitely agree with, you know, what you say as far as, you know, how approachable a lot of indie developers are. I'm not going to say all, because I mean, I'm sure there's a couple out there that are questionable, right? But yeah, no, I mean, for sure. And you know, it's one of those things, you know, if you ever had questions about it or anything like that, you know, feel free to, you know, always reach out to me, or, you know, just try reaching out to another indie developer if you know of them or you've heard of them or so on and so forth. But yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to thank you, Zemi, for coming on, because if people didn't know, when I first started doing interviews based, like, I do a show called Stubbscast where I interview content creators, Zemi was actually one of the first people when I was on stream. And I was first testing how to do a stream on YouTube. Zemi popped in and had a chat for about two hours, and I thank you for that. And eventually, the second or first ever content creation interview was with yourself, Zemi. And I thank you for doing that all the way back then, 2020, I believe it was.
Yeah. No, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and you know, just to touch on that for a quick second, you know, back, you know, I actually went back and watched that watched that interview. Yeah. not because I'm a narcissist, because I was actually doing another interview, and I was like, you know, I wonder, you know, because every time after you do an interview, like, you're always like, oh man, I should have said this, I wish I could have said that, or anything like that. You know what I mean? Like, there's always things that you forget. Undoubtedly, there's going to be things I forgot in this interview. So, you know, maybe there's always for the next one, right?
Indeed.
But I wanted to figure out what did I miss out on? What did I want to, like, mention in that interview with you that I maybe forgot about? Because I was doing another one with another content creator just a few weeks ago. And so I went back and I watched it. And one thing I did remember is, like, one of your questions was, like, where do I see like my YouTube channel going in the future, like what are my overall goals, all that different stuff, which I think was really, really interesting, especially setting up this interview, having that be like the last question, because, you know, back then I just started possibly playing with the idea of making a game, right?
Yeah.
But like, okay. I mean, not really to like the point of like, this is the type of game I'm going to make, or I didn't really have any of the details, but I just thought it was really, really kind of funny how you asked that question. And then I'm coming back here, several years later, having made a game. I guess that was my goal. So if I could go back a few years, and get back on that interview with you, I would have a very good, accurate answer for you.
Yeah.
And who knows, in a couple of years time, again, we don't know where the future is going to be holding.
Oh, yeah. No, you never know. You know what I mean? Like, you never know at all, which that I guess that's kind of the joy of life, right?
Indeed it is. Indeed it is. I'm going to probably try and I don't want to take up too much of Zemi's time. So in just kind of wrap all this up, we're going to ask Zemi to please provide us the best place to get hold of him. And any areas he would like to just finish off regarding the game.
I mean, and you know, I mean, I can give you guys another 30 minutes if you have any more questions, but that's no trouble at all. So if you guys want to reach out to me or reach out to my studio, which is pretty much me, you can contact us on Twitter at Goldenrod Games. So if you play the game and if there's something that you really, really like, want to share it with us, be sure to tweet at us, right? Or send us a DM. We'd love to hear that type of news and potentially even share it with other players on our social medias. Or, you know, if you don't have anything, you know, maybe super nice to say, you know, send us your feedback, you know, be constructive, right? You know, be constructive. Let us know specifically the things that you didn't like or how you think that the game could be improved, because we absolutely want to hear that as well. You know, a lot of what we've been hearing is really, really positive things. You know, and that's fantastic to hear, but, you know, we also want to hear the negative things too, because, you know, we truly do want to change back to school and improve upon it, make it an even better game, and so on and so forth. So, you know, definitely feel free to tweet at us or send a DM to at Goldenrod Games on Twitter. And then, of course, we have a website as well, goldenrodgames.com. We post some blog posts on there every now and then with updates about the game. There's also a contact us form. So if you would like to contact us that way for maybe business inquiries, or if you're an influencer and would potentially like to receive a, you know, code of the game to play on your YouTube channel or your Twitch channel or whatever it may be, you can of course contact us on the official website, goldenrodgames.com as well. And one thing I did want to touch on real quick, because a lot of people have been asking, and I've had to continually give them the answer that I don't want to give them, but it's the honest answer, and that's the answer that's the only answer I can give them. A lot of people have been asking, does this game's on Xbox, does this game have or support Xbox achievements? And currently, as of right now, the answer to that question is unfortunately no. There are achievements on the Steam version of the game, but the way that we published through Xbox is through the Creators Program, and publishing that way just does not... you just can't have achievements on your game whenever you publish through the Creators Program. So we are still like actively, you know, hopefully working with Xbox to hopefully get the game within the ID at Xbox program, which will then allow us to add achievements. Achievements are something that we definitely want to put in. I am an Xbox gamer, an avid one. I love unlocking achievement points. I don't have the most achievement score out of anyone, but I think I'm around 245,000 achievement score. So I'm there, right there with you. I want achievements and back to school. I can't, you know, possibly wait to hopefully get them into the game. But right now it's really just kind of up to Xbox on whether or not they're going to put back to school in the ID at Xbox program. But if you would like achievements and back to school, if you buy the game, if
that's going to help.
that's going to help, you know, buying the game is definitely going to help us, because, you know, that's going to prove and kind of show Xbox that, hey, you know, this game is performing really, really well, you know, and it's going to give us a little bit of, you know, extra, reason.
Weight.
That's a great word. Yeah. Weight. It's going to give us some extra weight to, get this game, hopefully an ID at Xbox. Another thing that you can do is you can always tweet, at Xbox or tweet at, you know, ID at Xbox and say, hey, just got done playing back to school. I really like the game. And you know, I'd love to see achievements come, right? You know, comments like that are definitely going to help us be able to put achievements into back to school as well. Which is something that, you know, really the only holdback is, quite literally, just, you know, Xbox not allowing us to do it with being in the Creators Program, right? We have the artwork for the achievements. We already know what the achievements are going to be, because they're in Steam and the achievements are going to be exactly the same. That's really the only holdup. So as soon, if we're ever put into ID at Xbox, which hopefully we will be, achievements will come.
So all you achievement hunters out there, you now know what to do. Simply buy the game, so tweet ID Xbox, and it will soon happen.
Yep.
I'm sure of it.
And once again, remember that 10% of all game sale profits will be going to the National Center for Learning Disabilities. So, you know, not only do you get
for that alone,
a really, really fun educational game that... will hopefully make you feel so, so smart, but probably not, because there's a lot of challenging questions in there. But in addition to you purchasing the game, you are also helping a charity or an organization that helps kids, teens, and adults who have learning disabilities. So it's a great cause as well.
That is a fantastic cause. What more could anyone ask? I personally want to say thank you to Zemi for taking his time out to speak with us about this game. I honestly, if you are looking to play a game, have a look on that website, have a look on the links below. Please do support the indie developers. We need more indie developers like Zemi, who you can see the enthusiasm to help produce better games in the future. Without these guys, you really wouldn't have the big guys' guns coming out. We wouldn't have the innovation for me, I truly believe the innovation stems from the indies and then it moves upwards. So please do support your indie developer. Stubbs, is there anything else you'd like to finish off?
No, I'd just like to thank Zemi for agreeing to do the interview. It was a very nice interview to do. And it was great to have him back on the indie developer this time, not just content creator.
I know.
Yep.
It's weird, isn't it? It's weird. I still have a very hard time telling people like I'm an indie dev. Like I, you know what I mean? Like I feel like, but am I really an indie dev? Like, you know, it's weird.
Yeah.
It's weird. I don't know.
You're going to have to put, we'll find you a little badge you can just put on your shirt and say, I am an indie dev. Oh my, you know? God,
I can't think of anything more narcissistic. Oh, I don't need that. No, but guys, truly, thank you so much for, you know, the invite onto your show. It's been way too long since I showed up here, and but I really do appreciate it, and definitely, you know, appreciate sharing my game with your guys' community.
Not at all. And actually, I hope we try and get you onto the midweek channel as well. Hopefully we'll try and drag you on there as well, just as you know, even just some topics, and hopefully have a chat regardless, because it has been a bit too long.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. But apart from that, I think we're going to go give it a call it a night or day, depending where you are in the world. Again, please support your indie devs. Please have a look at the game. You've heard it from the developer himself. You've heard it from Stubbs. Please do support your indie devs. And again, thank you so much for joining us today on this topic and looking back at this superb game. Thank you so much to everybody. Have a great time going to all of you.
Thank you.